This is fun! The FU Network.
Now, let's listen.
Originating from Fun, the FU Network's base north of Toronto, and bringing in voices from coast to coast, this is FU Politics, discussion and debate show, Rock'em Sock'em Politics. This election 2019, is the most embarrassing juvenile election in Canadian history. I don't give a shit about these pictures from 18 years ago when somebody's changed their life and changed their approach since then. I care about a 2006 video with Scheer only because he refuses to apologize for what's in there. There's a nice contrast there between what can happen when you apologize and change your ways and what happens when you remain a fucking bigot. But I think, where are the issues? You know, why is Justin Trudeau wearing dark makeup to play Aladdin in 2001 the big issue we're talking about when the environment's going to shit? Nobody's talking about the fact that we're dealing with an aging population and the tax base is going to be completely inverted. No one's talking about that and the problems that's going to have. Where's healthcare? That's part of the previous topic, but where's the discussion on that? You know, there's no discussions on anything of any substance or merit. All we're doing is Scheer tells lies and then Trudeau fends off the lies or just goes rally to rally, but his rallies aren't covered like Trump's rallies because he's not batshit insane. And so even though Trudeau does talk about policies at the rallies, we don't get to hear about it because nobody's covering the rallies. You know why? Because he's not going to say something insane like Trump. So this has been so far, I don't know, what are we, a week into this election, a little more than a week, and nobody's talking about issues that we need to talk about in this country, and I don't see them coming anytime soon. All right, joining me today, we've got Dave Kay. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Justin Whitehead.
Hey.
Hello. Wait, Justin D. Whitehead is the name coming up now. You're getting fancy?
Oh, yeah, got to shove the D in there.
Yeah, oh, that's, well, that
infer
just...
Infer what you will.
It elevates, it certainly elevates you. What do you mean, infer what you will? I don't... What do you infer? What can someone infer from having their D inserted? Oh, okay.
What else?
All right. Lauren Griffith is with us. Hello, Lauren.
How are you?
Good. Lauren, of course, doing a fine job as the co-host on Zodcast with Neil Wadewich, which I recommend you listen to. This week's episode, well, I guess... depending on whether on when you're listening to this podcast, but the one that was concurrent with this recording was excellent because Neil is very soft-spoken and like a very soft-spoken guy, but he's really pissed when it opens, and him and Lauren just open it up about the election, about many issues, and there's a great discussion with Jerry Nichols, who used to be the vice president to Stephen Harper's president at a place called the National Citizens Coalition, which was about as far right as you could go without falling off the earth. But he has become a political pundit, and he's got a lot to say in that interview. Listen to that. Oh, by the way, also, stop being freeloaders. We're looking for corporate sponsors. We're working at it. We got an agency, but we still need to keep the lights on. So give us one coffee a month. One coffee a month. Five freaking bucks, okay? At patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And I want to thank George James, Tom Getz, Russell Connolly, Cyrano Johnson, Alex, Stephen Chang. I mean, these are some of the names that were there before. We've got some new names that'll be in other shows. Joanne Coolidge, Stuart Bradley, Tyler Goodison. Lots of these people who are giving what they can to try to reclaim this portion of broadcasting in Canada where real people talk about real things where you can listen and find people that sound like you, that think like you, as opposed to people speaking in jargon that you can't freaking understand. People who get really excited about policy issues and get really wonky, as opposed to people who are the people who every day go to work and have to deal with the effects of these policies. So patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. You can just drop us some dough if you'd like, one time at PayPal, which is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Everybody is here. I think later.
Am I a chop liver?
Wait, who didn't? Oh, Stuart! I forgot.
Hello.
Stuart Chop Liver Benson is here with us. Stuart may, in fact, consider the fact that I didn't introduce him as some kind of conspiracy related to the death of Epstein, and we're going to hear about it again.
My Patreon shout-out was just going to be my introduction. You're just going to leave it at that, but...
All right, well,
no worries.
I'm sorry to have hurt your feelings.
That's okay. Okay? You're forgiven.
I'm a 2019 kind of guy. I can apologize. Okay? All right. So everybody has a topic that they want to talk about, and we're going to go first to the man who's inserted a D in his name, Justin D. Whitehead. Justin, what do you have to bring to our attention?
That's as good an intro as any. So
thank you very much for that compliment, which is not really a compliment. Just move on with your BS.
Okay. So this week, you may have noticed in the news for maybe the first time ever that a lot of outlets are actually covering climate change. Like you were just talking about, you know, we need to talk about some of the actual issues at play here. So there's a ton of different organizations this week that have been organizing rallies, protests, different actions to try and raise attention about climate change, because the UN Climate Summit for 2019 starts on the 23rd of this month. So tomorrow...
Wait a second, I have to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so for tomorrow, there's a huge
Wait,
rally...
Wait, why are you saying for tomorrow? You don't know when people are listening to this.
Right, so Friday, September 20th, there is something called Fridays for Future is doing a big protest, and Greta Thunberg is leading that. And then they're also planning for the following Friday, so September 27th, there's participation by, you know, you can go to the Climate Reality Project, Extinction Rebellion, Covering Climate Now, Fridays for Future, 350.org, Sunrise Movement, globalclimatestrike.net is where you can go to see info on all of these planned actions.
Okay. Sorry, I have to stop. I think I might be having a stroke or something, because what I just heard sounds like the community calendar from the community access station I started at in 1987. Are there any other things? Is there a bake sale you want to announce?
There might be, actually. There's 2,500 events scheduled in over 100.
You are not talking about every one of those.
No. One of them,
go through logistics.
I'm sure one or two of them may be selling baked goods. I'm sure. Maybe shapes of little trees or, you know.
Not be wrapped in plastic.
And by the way, these protests that have been going on this past week, where the hell has that been happening? Because I didn't see or read anything about it.
Yeah, there's been not the best coverage. They've got about 150 different publications that have signed on to, you know, start covering climate change more seriously, because, you know, we've known for how long now what we're doing. And as of the most recent reports, emissions are still rising globally, and they're supposed to be falling. So...
Justin,
we still got a lot of work to do.
Justin, let's face it. When it comes to the environment, we're fucked. All right? We all got to start building our own little biodomes with our own little gardens and shit like that and air purifiers. We're screwed. No, this is not going to stop anytime soon. This is not going to reverse itself that fast. You've got emerging nations like Africa and China who are saying, why should we stop polluting now when we're just gearing up to a proper economy. Well, China can't say that, but certainly African nations. Yeah, great, North America and Europe. You had the chance to pollute while you were building up your infrastructure and your economic strength. And now you're telling us, well, it's time to cut emissions before the African nations are given the same chances that Europe and North America has been given.
That's tough because the U.S. has contributed something like 50% of all of like overall greenhouse gases over time. And then they're also kind of doing the worst right now as far as actually doing
50%? China? Yeah, I mean, there's cities in China where you can't even breathe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, China is now the largest single polluter, but as far as like aggregate pollution over time, like for to do with greenhouse gases, it's the U.S. has made up the bulk of it.
All right. Anybody, by the way, anybody who wants in the panel who wants to jump in, just type a little thing in the chat and I'll bring you in. Anybody want to say anything right now? A comment on what Justin said?
Well, just I don't want to be the, like, it's weird to say in defense of China, but they are making a lot of big strides towards green and renewable energy. Like, the whole coal, like, I'm not arguing about the coal thing. That is true. But, there was when Greta Thunberg, I think she was in front of a committee in front of Congress today, and the guy brought up the example of like, well, China's doing all this pollution, so why should we do anything? And Greta Thunberg, because she's pretty quick, she was like, well, back home in, I think, Sweden, people say the same thing about America. Why should we do green energy when America's doing all this polluting? But China is trying to do a lot to change it. Like, I don't think they're stupid. Like, I think they know where this is going as well. Like, I don't think they're selfish to the point of, self-destruction. I think they know it's in their best interest to switch over too. So I think there's a lot of this is weird, unearned distrust.
Yeah, the thing that doesn't make any freaking sense to me is there is so much money to be made in technologies and machinery to help deal with pollution and climate change. There's a whole industry that could be growing exponentially. Instead, we have idiots like Doug Ford who shuts down a windmill farm out of ideological reasons as opposed to scientific reasons. We've got people fighting on the right because they don't like the hippies who talk about the environment, where they're missing a massive, massive opportunity to invest in technologies that are going to really, really be needed going forward, just because they want to piss off the hippies. This doesn't make any sense. American business used to be a little bit smarter, but it has become myopic and exceptionally greedy and doesn't think beyond the next quarter. Dave Kay, you wanted to say something?
A little something about you mentioned like African nations. One of the interesting things about African nations is many of them skipped completely like landline telephones and went straight to cell towers. So you're not wrong saying that some of them might say, well, you know, we've got business to build, but I think the idea that they're not looking ahead either. I think Stu's right. There's reason to have hope in other parts of the world because they're in this too, and they've got just as much skin in it as we do.
All right, Lauren, thoughts?
Okay, so with the China thing, there is a benefit to working with the green technologies. And like you were saying, that there is a market for this. Recently, solar panel prices have gone down and wind energy, like the cost of making these and maintaining them, et cetera, has gone down significantly since this has rolled out, and there is money to be made in working on a clean angle. And right now they're owning the businesses when it comes to manufacturing solar panels and those companies that manage those. So they may not be doing anything in a consumerist sense, like for their people or perhaps like environmental policies, but they are taking advantage of the market that other people are, other nations, excuse me, are taking advantage of. Like, you know, it's something that we should look into. I don't think that saying that, you know, they're not doing anything is a valid argument. They may not be taking it to heart or as seriously as we would like them to, but at least they're taking advantage of the idea in some way, right? Like they're playing the market to be able to benefit themselves, benefit the world by producing these things. So there is that point as well.
All right. I think the best idea is a big space ark.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to start building one. I don't know where we'll go.
Shotgun.
Ed's going to build Elysium.
Yeah, we'll build Elysium with Jodie Foster. That was a shit movie. Okay. Is there more on your topic, Justin D. Whitehead?
No. I mean, just the general dread that, you know, we're destroying the whole fucking planet and we should probably do something about it. That'd be nice.
You know what? Even dogs know you don't shit where you eat.
Yep.
And why? Okay, you want to argue about climate science? You want to get, you know, 99.9% of climate scientists to say that, humankind has been raising, has been a factor in raising temperatures. And then take two other guys who say, no, it isn't, and believe them, fine, go ahead. But there's no questioning pollution. There's no questioning the plastic in the ocean. There's no questioning the dirt in the air. Like, this is stuff that you can see it. It's physical. It's not something that's abstract. It's right there. Why the hell would anybody oppose cleaning up pollution? This I don't understand. And I'm not expecting any of you to give me an answer because there is no sensible answer. It was a rhetorical question because it's just stupid. All right. Let's go to Dave Kay. What's your topic this week?
I was going to talk about the election. But I think we've had enough talk about Scheer versus Trudeau, even in your intro. But the ugly part of this election for a lot of voters is that they are feeling like they have to vote strategically, because a lot of voters understand that Scheer isn't great, but a lot of voters also don't really want to vote Trudeau because they don't agree with the Liberals. And so Jagmeet Singh and the NDP and Elizabeth May and the Green Party kind of get left out in the rain. But there was a couple of headlines over the last couple of weeks about their parties that really didn't make either of them look very good. If anybody was paying attention.
Wait, do you mean paying attention to Jagmeet Singh and Elizabeth May?
No, more to the parties, actually.
Well, to their parties? Yeah, no, not really. I'll speak for most of Canada. No, not really.
Yeah, not really.
But your point is?
Yeah, out in Atlantic Canada, the Greens and the NDP don't really have a lot of success stories, but what did come through was that several members of the NDP had reportedly, by several I mean 15, and these were like potential candidates, had written a document or signed onto a document that said they were leaving the NDP and they were going for the Greens. This was reported by the Green Party and presented to the media. And the 15 members were listed as having chosen to do so because they didn't feel that Jagmeet Singh was paying enough attention to the Atlantic coast, that he wasn't going to represent them very well, and that he didn't have a lot of a chance to win. And there was specific doubt about that chance to win because...
I think that last part is the real part. The stuff before that was the bullshit icing on the cake.
You might think even further than that when I say that they didn't think he had a chance to win because he is a minority leader Canadian wearing a turban. And so the Green Party kind of celebrated about it. They had a press release in early September But within days, Jagmeet Singh came out and said that the news was false and that very many of these supposed turncoats had made no such commitment at all. And the media kind of got led around by the nose by both parties. No one really followed up with anybody. There's a couple of Globe articles and a National Post piece, CBC articles. And what's clear in it is that the media didn't really do a whole lot of the necessary fact-checking on their own story.
Oh, wow. Color me surprised.
Right? I'll give you a second to pick yourself off the
floor. You're the clickbait-chasing, rabbit-hole-running down race to the bottom. Media didn't do any actual journalism? Wow. I'm so surprised. That you mean the media that could be asking the two main party leaders about issues and instead ask them about freaking nonsense? You mean those journalists, they didn't actually check it out? Okay, I'm stunned. Please continue.
Okay. So Singh comes out and says that the supposed turncoats aren't turncoats at all, and that many of them have told him, you know, that they're not going to do that. And many of them, in fact, did release statements saying that they had no intention of leaving the NDP, that they were loyal and they weren't going to be joining the Greens. And then the Greens, some of the Greens doubled down in New Brunswick specifically saying, well, you know, this is what he's saying and he's trying to save face concerning he did just lose a whole bunch of people. And within a week, the number of people that were leaving had dwindled from 15 down to a number that no one could really tamp down, being as low as 2. And the story just kind of fizzled from there.
But, you know what, Dave? You ever heard that thing, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make noise? This is what I'm thinking about when you tell me about the internecine battles of the NDP and the Green Party in one of our national regions. Who gives a shit?
Right. But what bothered me about what I think is important for people to remember is that when you're reading a story like this, you should read it with a much more critical eye, because when you read the articles on a timeline, it becomes very clear that, you know, the media didn't get out and get aggressive on this and figure out who these supposed signatories were. Yeah. And ask them whether or not they were actually doing what the Green Party said they were doing. Because the Green Party, when they threw their initial press release, they only had one member of the 15. And I was thinking about it even just today. If I were about to turn my back on a political party for whom I'd, you know, done enough work to be a potential candidate, I would probably show up to the press conference where I'm going to be signing up with my new party, and I might even bring my family. They had one guy by himself who just put on a Green Party shirt like he was switching teams, and it was really not all that, you know, impressive, but it certainly sent a few ripples out in Eastern Canadian politics.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I nodded off there. thank you for that report on what's happening out there amongst them. Certainly, if that gentleman wanted to attract attention, rather than changing shirts, he maybe should have released some pictures of himself from 20 years ago wearing brown makeup on his face. Stuart has a good point, though. You started off, Dave, talking about, was it you who said the people aren't thrilled about voting for
their
Scheer or Trudeau? Yeah. Stuart has a good point. Stuart, go.
Well, it's just the one little fun thing about having parliamentary politics as we do in Canada is that only people in either Scheer or Trudeau's or I guess May or Jagmeet Singh's riding. Like, you only vote for them if you live in their riding. So if you have you can make that sort of strategy where it's like, I don't like what Trudeau did, but I don't want to vote for the NDP or the Conservative candidate. You can still vote Liberal and not feel like you're voting for a dude who did blackface. That explanation may not sit well with a lot of people, because it's still every vote for a Liberal candidate does ultimately go towards electing Justin Trudeau as prime minister. But just because that doesn't mean that, like, if you don't think that the NDP candidate in your riding is that good and you prefer the Liberal candidate, you can still vote for them and you're not voting for Trudeau.
Well, you're right. You vote for we vote for parties here. We've gotten
caught
up
vote
in
for
the
individual candidates, and then whichever party has the most elected candidates usually becomes prime minister.
We don't have a national election here. Mm-hmm. They call it a federal election. It's not a national election. It's a series of elections in ridings across the country that occur at the same time.
Yeah.
Can I offer a little counter to that?
Okay, go ahead.
So you remember back when Kevin O'Leary was talking about running for conservative leadership, right? He kind of made a little bit of a play at it. Well, one of the things he said during that run was that he would much rather be prime minister in Canada than president in the United States. And people sort of said, well, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, the prime minister in Canada has so much more power than the president does in the US. And it seemed like that wouldn't be true. But if you really look at our system, yes, we don't have a national election. So we are just sort of doing a riding by riding thing. And then we just kind of end up with a leader that whose party got sort of a plurality. But another issue with that is that the prime minister really has complete control over their cabinet, which does most of the actual governing, but then they also have control in Canada over the nomination process completely. Like, they can just reject, they can veto any nominee they want. So if somebody in the party did decide, well, I don't really want to go toe the party line on this or that, they can just boot them out. So there is quite a bit of power behind the prime minister. And I think that's why a lot of people are pushing for a Liberal minority they're hoping for instead, just to sort of like throw a check on that.
Yeah. But that's the beauty of like confidence in parliament. Like there is a ton of power, but you got to convince a bunch of people to trust you before you can wield that power. So I get your point. And so
it's still not a majority though, right? You only have to convince 37-ish some odd percent, depending on how all the other parties are doing.
It's still a decent amount of people you got to convince to agree with you.
Why I will interject here to people who are listening and or people who know people who say this, that I'm going to not vote and send a message that way. Mm-hmm. The message you're sending is ignore me, because politicians like nothing better than to have fewer and fewer people to have to convince to vote for them. So when you don't vote, do you think that these political leaders sit there crying and say, oh no, John Smith didn't cast a ballot. What do I have to do to get him to? They don't give a rat's ass. They actually don't want people voting, because the less number of voters there are, the fewer that they have to convince in order to win. So this idea that you're going to send a message to the system by not voting, you're an idiot. That's the message that you're sending. You don't understand how politics works. You are caught up in idealism, and you think that, well, if enough people spoil their ballots or refuse to vote, well, then the political leaders will say, well, we've got to do something. No, they will not. They will say, oh, good, there's less people we have to convince to vote for us. That is the truth. All right.
If I might add one last thing.
Yes, Dave.
There are some, I've known voters who live in ridings where part of the reason why they don't vote is because they live in a riding that's solidly one color all the time. People out in, you know, rural areas usually have to fight the tide when it comes to conservative votes. People who would maybe vote conservative or even liberal in, you know, like solid NDP ridings might not vote. When you don't vote, the party that you would otherwise support doesn't know that you're there either. So it's important, like when you vote, you are saying something that someone hears, even if you don't think that's the case.
And you know what people say? My vote doesn't count. My little vote doesn't count. Well, again, you're an idiot who never paid attention in high school civics class. okay? Yeah. Because the way people get elected is vote by vote by vote by vote by vote. So yeah. Your vote is actually exceptionally important. Look in the United States, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes, but in certain districts, she lost by a razor-thin margin, and that was enough to give that Frito Bandito the White House. Your votes they do count, and it is just a lazy cop-out to say, A, my vote doesn't count, or B, I don't like any of the leaders, so I'm not going to vote. You know what? Forget the leader. Look at the party. Go to their website. Check out their policies. Find somebody who you agree with more than the other people, okay? You're never going to agree with anybody 100%. If you want to agree with a candidate 100%, then you be the candidate. But otherwise, you have to... The world is compromise, okay? If you don't like the choices you're given, well, those are your choices. One of them is going to run the country. And of those choices, there's probably one of them that you dislike less than the other two or three or four or whoever the many parties we have now. So don't expect to be swept off your feet like Justin Trudeau did in the last election, okay? Don't expect Prince Charming to come at the end and put the glass slipper on you and all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to vote for this person. Get your head out of your ass and realize...
Wrong Disney movie.
What?
I said wrong Disney movie.
Who gives a shit?
He's coming on a carpet this time.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, should we...
All right.
I can't help it. My mind is broken today.
It's been, yeah, a thing.
Should we talk about the elephant in the room right now?
No, I want to talk to Lauren because she's been polite. Sorry. All right, Lauren, what's your story?
Okay, so speaking of the NDP a little bit, this is perfect because you have to vote for your values, right? Like, I see that point that Stu had made where you're saying you're voting for, a liberal candidate that just so happens to be a surrogate for Trudeau in a way. Like, so you're not technically voting for him, but that's fine, whatever, we get that. But at the end of the day, yes, you have to go through their policies. You have to go through their record. You have to vote for your values. And my bit that I was going to do today was how Jagmeet had visited my city, Barrie, and just kind of the reception. It was actually pretty well, to be honest with you. People were very animated, and it was a very diverse group of people, to be honest. Like, I saw young, old, like every color of the rainbow, able, disabled, like there was a couple construction workers that were like working on the roof that stopped what they were doing and just started leaning on the building and just checking it out to see what he had to say. So it was cool.
Hey, listen, Lauren, let's be honest. That's because nobody goes to freaking Barrie.
I know.
Hey, we are Beach.
I live a stone's throw from Barrie, Ontario. I like Barrie, Ontario. I may, with Leanna, hoping to be doing a show, one of our live shows, in Barrie, Ontario. I like Barrians, if that's what you call yourselves who live there. So I have nothing against Barrie, and in fact have a lot for Barrie. But the fact is, people of celebrity status rarely ever go to Barrie. So when somebody of national importance shows up, yeah, you're going to have people hanging from the flagpoles by their arms trying to get attention and have a look.
Well, for context, Barrie's been pretty historically safely blue for a very long time.
And let's also put this into perspective. You know, he did not even fill the parking lot of a Circle K. So,
yeah,
you know, like, it was well received, but I don't know if necessarily, you know, a whack ton of people knew about it. Even if they did, they probably don't care, because Barry is not necessarily the most politically active place that I've seen.
Well, the people in Barry are true Canadians. They're people, they're working people.
Yes.
Right? They don't have time in the middle of the day to go out and welcome some political leader. Usually, when you have political leaders coming to town, there's an advance team for that political leader who brings people in from neighboring neighborhoods, just to make sure it's not embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, they didn't do that with Jugmeet because he didn't fill the parking lot at Circle K.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Barry exists because it's convenient to commute to Toronto to work and then back again within the same day. Like, so most, like, not a lot goes on during the day in Barry on a weekday. So, but I don't know.
And
shout out to Barry, though. I can't stand the slander. It's special place in the heart.
Wait, what slander? The slander on Barry?
Yes.
The other thing about it, though. So, I mean, with that whole thing being said, why choose such a small place, right? Like, why would you go to a place that isn't particularly noteworthy, right? Like,
and where your voting prospects are not very high?
I disagree. No. I disagree there. Because,
well, you think that the NDP has a chance in Barrie?
I think that his impression will stick. That's what I'm going to go with, because we are we're a safe blue. That's just how we've been. But his impression stuck. The fact that he came to a smaller city that is, as you said, very working class oriented.
Well, I'm just trying to picture who he did impressions of.
Yeah.
Like, was he like Rich Little? Did he do like impressions of famous people? He said they were they'll remember his impression. And I'm just wondering who was his best impression? Did he do a Richard Nixon? Impressionists always do Richard Nixon.
He did a Daddy Bernie.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was very focused on healthcare. His big thing for
finally,
yes, his big stop was dental. He said anybody who has who's making less than $70,000 a year would have full public dental coverage. So that's nice. And he said
people turn around and say we can't afford it. Now, every single social program that is proposed, you get people, we can't afford it. And then they go and fund other things which are useless. Care is one of the weirdest things, because think of your body. Is there any other part of your body, head to toe, that is not covered by health insurance, by OHIP? In Ontario, is there any other, is there any organ in you? Is there any limb? Is there anything in your body other than maybe going bald? Is there anything else in your body that if it breaks down, OHIP won't cover it? It covers everything except fucking teeth. And that's the thing that doesn't make sense. Teeth, people don't realize. It's not just brush up, brush up, brush every day and floss. Teeth can lead to infections, which lead to longer hospital stays because they become invasive. Yeah. It's dental care is not a luxury. Dental care is something that's, I think, an obligation in a first world country to provide some level of assistance for dental care. Because I got a good friend who, I'll tell you, didn't have the money. When he was a kid, he got hit in the face with a bat, and his teeth did not look good. They didn't have the money to fix them. And as he got older, it became a problem. He became so infected and toxic that he had to spend overnights in the hospital on an IV drip with antibiotics. Eventually there was a fundraiser done and he's got some front teeth now, but he had to get so deathly ill in the rest of his body for the health system to pay attention. That's just stupid.
Oh yeah, my girlfriend had the same problem. Like she had like a wisdom tooth taken out and that cost her money. And then it just went septic. That cost her money. Like the poor girl almost flipping died. Like it's brutal. It cost her, you know, a whack ton of money to almost die.
I understand people say, you know, we can't afford things. You look at our, don't look at deficits. Deficits is a boogeyman that the conservatives throw at us all the time. Deficits, 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 our grandchildren. You have to look at the GDP to debt ratio. And with interest rates as low as they are now, government borrowing makes more sense because you're borrowing now so that you can invest in things before interest rates go up. We can't afford it. Yes, we have a deficit in this country. Yes, we have debt. But so do just about every other Canadian. You learn to manage the debt because some things are worthwhile. The GDP to debt ratio is the thing people need to look at and whether that's healthy or not, not just the deficit.
Just speaking of investments, like, yes, there is a monetary one, but let's also think about the investment in, like, our physical future, right? Like, if our children or the next generations are healthy in mind, body, soul, et cetera, you know, financially well off, or at least stable at the very least, that's an investment, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, this isn't crazy left-wing hippie shit, all no. right? This is business people should understand it's enlightened self-interest. Do you want your workers and your future workers to be healthy and productive, or do you want them to be impaired in their productivity because they've got problems with their teeth, or perhaps they can't see the computer properly because, as Justin was pointing out to me in our little chat, optometry is not covered either, or it's only covered up to a certain amount. So glasses, vision care, seemed to be not important for some reason. These are just stupid cutoff decisions that have been made that for enlightened self-interest for a society, you cover that because you're increasing productivity of your workers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please vote for me. All right. Anything else, Lauren?
You know what? I think that is good, but just again with the impression, I really think that he's getting that message out there that, you know, when we talked about the slogans, he is really in it for you. No one else is talking about this, and I think that that's worthy to note. And I think that you should vote for your values and check out, like, just see that there are other options out there. If you don't, like, if you feel dirty voting for your liberal surrogate or conservative, figure it out. Like, if these guys seem to align more with your values, then hey, like, I'm not endorsing anybody right now, nor should I, but just take a look.
Well, I think that you make a good point, but I think you also have to look at who has a chance of forming a government, and between the two parties, whose policies are you comfortable with, and whose vision of the country you agree with more or less, and who scare the shit out of you. And that's why, yes, it's great to vote your values and say, I'm going to vote NDP or I'm going to vote Green. I said vote values, so I can't include Maxime Bernier's party. But really, you got to look at it from my point of view and say, what, either the Liberals or the Conservatives are going to win. Whose vision of the country am I most comfortable with? And vote based on that rather than people call it strategic voting. I just call it being smart rather than you know, connecting to a particular party and staying with that in an orthodox way. Dave, you have a point about costs?
Well, yeah. When it came to the dental program discussion, I think Jagmeet Singh would do well if he's going to make promises that a lot of people would say, well, that sounds like it's going to cost too much. I wonder if it would do well for him to say, this is what it would cost the average taxpayer. And then based off of that number, a lot of people might look at that and say, yeah, that's worth my money.
And it's less, so, and it's less than they would be paying themselves.
Right. And if it was less than what they expected or less than what they're paying themselves, they might say, hey, that sounds like a great idea. That saves me money. I find it kind of frustrating that politicians nowadays don't speak to us as if we're adults. Because,
well, you know, they're not acting like adults, and the media is reporting like children. So why should they treat us like adults when they're not acting like adults themselves and the population is responding to the schoolyard antics? Yes. You know, it's, and by the way, Lauren, I would say that you're in a safe blue territory. As more and more people move north from Toronto to telecommute, and as real estate becomes less affordable in Toronto and more affordable in places like Barrie, you're going to see in 10 years, probably over the course of 10 years, places that were safe blue ridings start to become purple, maybe even red, because you're going to get those more liberal urban voters coming out to the suburbs and bringing their values with them and their votes.
And that's already sort of started in Barrie too. Cause shout out to my good buddy, Keenan Alwyn, who's he's the first openly gay council member on Barrie City Council. And he's kicking ass and taking names. So, he got into a bit of a dust up with some of his other council members over asking them to condemn Andrew Scheer for appearing with Faith Goldie, and he held his ground. I think he took his lashes, but he's come out, I think, a lot stronger. So things are changing demographically in Barrie.
All right, and Stuart, did you must have some story to tell us that's of great import. What's your story this week?
Oh, yeah, kind of ironic given today, because the Conservatives for the first couple of days this week had been going overtime just trying to manufacture any sort of thing to attack Justin Trudeau with. As of, I think it was yesterday, the Conservatives had to really quickly walk back. A couple of them, including Brock Harrison, had tweeted out that the RCMP had confirmed that they were investigating Trudeau and the SNC-Lavalin corruption scandal. And this was first reported, I believe, by the Post Millennial. I didn't see anyone else.
Gonna get your news, get it from a place that's so reliable, like the Post Millennial.
Yeah, well, it shows the direct sort of pipeline for the conservative, like, media organizations and, like, the guest conservative operatives themselves, because within moments of Post Millennial posting this, Brock Harrison, the conservative communications director, and the conservative Twitter account, like the official Twitter account itself, were tweeting out that breaking, RCMP confirms Justin Trudeau is under investigation for the SNC-Lavalin corruption scandal. And they almost immediately had to walk it back because the RCMP had to make a clarification saying, no, we didn't say that. Why are you saying we said that? And then,
you know, the problem with that is, Stuart, some people only saw the first tweet, not the walk back.
Oh, of course. That's exactly how these things work. The correction always gets like a fraction of the attention that the
and they know that. And they know that. They're fighting dirty. You're talking about, the RCMP and their investigation, they're all week. People were talking about, why didn't Justin Trudeau turn over files to the RCMP? Why was he refusing to give the RCMP files for their investigation? And the fact is, there's no investigation. okay? The RCMP said there's no investigation. And if there was an investigation, the RCMP wouldn't be releasing that the Prime Minister's office hadn't been giving them files, because the RCMP does not comment on active cases. So this is bullshit coming and going. But all week, people were still saying, why isn't he turning over the files? Why? Because nobody asked him, because there's no investigation. But just,
and he would have no legal obligation to hand them over unless the RCMP had a warrant, and in that case, he wouldn't have a choice. So if he's not handing them over, it means he doesn't have to.
And he doesn't have to because nobody's asked, because there's no investigation. The RCMP, the only reason they were nosing around at all is because Scheer said he wanted the RCMP to investigate it. And if the RCMP said, you know, no, there's nothing here, then they would have been accused of favoritism. So they're like, fine, we'll go over there. We'll go through the motions. We'll talk to Jordy Wilson-Raybould, whatever. But they never opened an investigation, partially because the law that Justin Trudeau was found in breach of, the Ethics Act, says within itself, within the Ethics Act, that the breach that Justin Trudeau committed is not a criminal act. And the RCMP investigate criminal acts. So why the hell would the RCMP go to investigate, have an open a criminal investigation into something that is specifically listed as not being a criminal offense? This is stupid. It's like the RCMP doing an investigation into my speeding ticket. Like, stupid bullshit is that? Anyway, you had more to say?
Well, just because it was kind of ironic, because the thing that this is has all been sort of percolating in the background and this whole kerfuffle came out about was that this question was asked of the RCMP. I'll just double check what her name is.
Could have done that while I was talking.
Yeah, Brenda Luckey, but she was the RCMP commissioner. She was the one who just sort of says, we take all investigations, we do them to a fullest, and that was her answer. But she was doing this press conference at a press conference about this Ordis guy who is a high-ranking, I guess, RCMP official who's been charged with, like, under the Espionage Act for, I think, selling secrets. And, like, he had access to, like, Five Eyes information, and it's... there's not a whole lot of details of like what he stole or who he was selling it to, but just from the way people are presenting it, it's like, he was a cybersecurity guy for the RCMP, and he was like, he was stealing secrets and selling them to people. And it's like, it's just sort of been like sort of brewing on the side burners and hasn't been getting a lot of attention. And to then have the conservatives, or I guess, cause it was a journalist who asked the question about whether or not they're also investigating this, but it was just so blatant. Like, no, this is the more important story. Like, we have an actual like spy going rogue and like selling secrets, and it's just been completely thrown onto the back burner.
Well, you know what else has been thrown on the back burner? While everyone was talking about the investigation that didn't exist into SNC-Lavalin and Justin Trudeau, the fiction, the RCMP did issue, I think, a statement saying that they're going to be looking into what happened in the Mark Norman affair, which would involve investigation of people from the Harper government. That didn't get a whole lot of attention. The fact that it seems like the Harper government may have been playing fast and loose with stuff, but... the Trudeau government is the one that's been wearing the Norman affair. But you don't see a whole lot about that because, you know what? It doesn't fit like the narrative. It's like Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the others. Out you go. So does anybody have any comments on what Stuart had to say?
Yeah, just along what you said right there, there's not a lot of follow-up right now in the national news about what goes on or what was going on with Jason Kenney's campaign either, because there were a whole lot of weird, shady doings going on there that really hasn't seen a whole lot of resolution, certainly no updates.
Yeah, there's people should go online and look it up themselves. There's some really shady shit that went on with Jason Kenney's campaign, and somebody should be looking into that, because that is it looks like if there was a crime there, it was a crime that had mens rea. That's Latin for guilty mind. It means that there was intent to break the law. There was no intent to break the law. In fact, the intent was, who the hell's humming?
It's Law and Order, Ed the Sock.
Did I tell you, did I want theme music? When I want theme music, I'll tell you to give me theme music, and I'll want it to be of better quality than that. You just sounded like you were humming. Like you were like, what the hell kind of rude shit is that?
Oh my God.
I don't even remember what I was saying.
Overpowering you. So,
all right. I remember what I was saying.
Saying someone should look into that.
Yeah. Someone should look into that. Okay. Justin Whitehead, you want to say something?
Yeah. So interestingly, we have another situation where the conservatives sort of want to have their cake and eat it too with all this. They're so concerned with, you know, legal issues and, oh, you might have broken a law. This should be investigated. And they're all pro that, you know, when it's pointed literally anywhere other than at themselves. But a real point that people need to understand is if you look at the Conservative Party's 2018, their conference that they had, they made a policy declaration. They do it every time they have a big, you know, a big
shindig.
Hootenanny. Yeah, so Scheer was leader by then, and they produced this document, which is available on their website for the public to read. And one of the statements on there is that the party wants to remove judicial power from the Supreme Court and allow Parliament to overrule what the Supreme Court decides. So they want to, and then, you know, so there's that. So they're
which,
saying,
wait, which party is this?
Conservative Party.
The Conservative Party.
The Law and Order Party.
The Conservative Party wants. I didn't ask for that theme. I told you I would ask. The Conservative Party, their platform is that they want Parliament to be able to override the Supreme Court.
Their policy declaration from the party itself, they said that they want to give the legislative body the final say over everything, which includes the Supreme Court. They said it's right in there.
That's a fucking disaster.
Right? So they're saying, oh, well, we want to be, we respect the law, but we also want to be above it and in control of it.
Yeah. We respect the law as long as we're the law.
Absolutely. Would that be retroactive?
They want to be Judge Dredd.
Yes, because they also say in there that the Conservative Party of Canada does not support the right to die legislation, which is something that's already been ruled on by the Supreme Court. Yeah. They also said that they don't support, what was it, Bill C-16, I think it was, like the anti-discrimination.
Where they added transsexual people into the, you know, protected groups.
Right. And they want to repeal that. And then they said, you know, oh, the Conservative government will not officially reopen the abortion debate, but they're going to let their people vote on it. You know? So you tie all this together and they're saying, so they want to have ultimate authority to overrule the Supreme Court. And then they want to reopen abortion.
Well,
they want to reopen.
You know, here's the thing about reopening abortion.
They want to reopen.
Here's the thing about reopening abortion. The Conservatives may wish to do it, but right now in Canada, there is no abortion law. It is different if there is a law on the books that the government wants to reform or change or add things to. That's one thing. When there's no law and the government comes in and says, we're going to just create one, especially something like abortion, good luck. That's political suicide. And I can't see anybody, any conservative party that is has Stephen Harper pulling its strings reopening this. It's they're going to let their backbenchers from Podunk stand up and speak about abortion. They always do. So these idiots stand up. They usually look like they just graduated high school with a lot of Brill cream in their hair. It looks like they all look like the same person out of a mold. And they get up there and they make a comment or they make a statement about abortion and their opposition to abortion. It's like, that's very good. Sit the fuck down. And that's the end of it. The bigger concern is what provinces can do to delist certain services that work around the edge for abortion providers. That's the area women need to look at, not federally. Women need to be, and anybody concerned about the right to choose needs to be concerned about the actions of your provincial government, because they can start eating away. They can start the attrition under your nose, and you'd never know it. Trying to institute a new abortion law, it would be everywhere. In every newspaper, it would be discussed. It would be on every news site. It would be something that's very, very public. But the provinces can start eating away at the services that are covered for abortion services until poor people can't afford to do it, or they wind up having illegal ones. That's where you got to keep your eye, on that ball, not on the federal government.
Yeah. But that's where they're going with that, right? That is actually kind of their plan. They have, there's been a whole big scandal with that. You know, there's been people saying it's political suicide. And then one of the organizations that either works with him or supports him straight up was like, no, this is happening. Like, we are supporting him based off of this.
Wait, who's him?
Andrew Scheer, excuse me. Supporting this idea of, the abortion debate. What they are trying to do is get enough candidates or people to do that, to go provincially, locally, and bring it up that way. Like, bring it up from the bottom upwards, so that you have this groundswell of people supporting this anti-abortion movement. And I just need everybody to stick their foot in their mouths, because if you are in a situation where you can have a baby and you find yourself having a baby and do not want that baby, that is your choice. And if anybody else is outside of that relationship or situation, they just need to kindly step off.
Because you know what? You know what this is? And this is an unpopular statistic, but crime has been falling in the United States for decades now. And they can trace it back to when abortion became legal. Because there's not these unwanted children, not properly raised, in poverty, whatever. I mean, not everybody who's in poverty commits crime. That's just bullshit. But there is a correlation between Roe versus Wade in the United States and the continued dropping of the crime rate across the United States. And yeah, we got to keep our eyes open. Justin wants to say something about the notwithstanding clause. What?
Oh, no, I was just, it was in the chat. It's just they had that mentioned in there as well, that they'd be willing to use it for several different issues.
The notwithstanding clause. The notwithstanding clause is the stupidest piece of legislation probably ever made on this earth. Why do you have a constitution which binds a nation together under common rules and then have a section where one of the provinces can say, yeah, but not us. Like, what the fuck's the point of the Constitution? Could have just left the British North America Act at that point. The notwithstanding clause, I know it was necessary to bring Quebec in and so on, but don't. Like, stay the hell out. No province should be allowed to ignore the Constitution of the country. Period. That's the end. And you know what? When people finally force me to run for prime minister and elect me, that's what I will do. I will get rid of the notwithstanding clause. That, and I will also make it that you need at least a 30-day pause between the end of one season or holiday and you stocking in stores the next season or holiday.
Bless you.
All right. Two very important subjects to Canadians. All right. Guys, I think we're done.
All right.
All right. Okay. Do the damn music now.
Okay.
You feel better?
I got it out of my system.
We're good, because that was shit. Okay. I want to thank Dave K. Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing that story to our attention. I want to thank Lauren Griffith for the discussions, especially the discussions about Barry and possible changing demographics. And we managed to get into talking about dental care and stuff. So thank you for bringing all of that whole basket of things for us to talk about, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
Justin D. Whitehead, thank you for talking to us about expedition explosion? What the hell?
Extinction Rebellion and all of the climate change things. And if you want to know more, go to globalclimatestrike.net if you want to participate in those.
My man said glimate.
Glimate.
Yes, glimate. Yes. I think everyone knows how to spell it with a C.
Today, right. The D stands for diligence.
Every week, the D is going to stand for something different with you, Justin. So this week it's diligence. Next week it has to be something else. Okay, what's that address again, Justin?
Global Climate Change or globalclimatestrike.net.
All right. Stuart, thank you as always for being here.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed myself as always.
Yeah, and thank you for providing the non-musical interlude.
You're welcome.
All right. That's it. This is the point in the show, by the way, where I say that we're working on getting corporate sponsors. We're working on getting, which isn't going to change our content, but we are working on getting advertisers. But until then, to keep the lights on, please take one coffee a month, $5, one coffee, and donate it or become a subscriber to FU Politics, the FU Network. If you want to support this kind of programming, where people can talk like real people talk, we're talking with you and to you, but not at you. If you support that, go to patreon.com/FU Network TV, and we're going to be adding some perks there as well that will allow you. I'm not going to tell you now, but I'll tell you next week. Go there, patreon.com/FU Network TV. If you just want to help us through PayPal, you don't want to do it monthly, that's funetworktv@gmail.com. Send the money through that address. We need your help because we're doing this for you. FU, it means for us as well as the other thing. So for us, for you, we can't do it if we allow the corporate media to just squash us like a bug. So let's fight back. Let's be those rebels on the moons of Yavin. Wait, did they? I don't know if they got wiped out. Let's be Luke Skywalker shooting that thing down the garbage chute in the Death Star. Let's be the rebellion that tells corporate media that you guys want something better than what they've been giving you. And that better is us. We may disappear at that point. If they start giving it to you, great. That's fine. But our goal is to be here to give you programming that you can sit down, listen to, learn from, and laugh with. Okay? Where do you get that combination elsewhere? Nowhere. Plus these lovely steak knives. All right. thank you, everybody. I am Ed the Sock. You can find me at Ed the Sock on Twitter. Find our Facebook page, which is Ed the Sock, FU Network TV. I'm on Instagram, Ed_the_sock. If you want to contact any of the panelists, the information will be listed on our new website. By the way, our new website launched. There's still some nips and tucks happening, but it looks a damn sight better than it did. Kyle Gunderson, you worked miracles, man. So I give him credit. I'm Ed the Sock, coming to you from the FU Network headquarters, north of Toronto, but south of Barrie. I want to thank you for listening. And until I think of a tagline, That's it. Have a good week.
Have a good night.
Good night. Night.
This is fun! The FU Network!